News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Hour number three of the Pete Callender Show. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I want to welcome to the program Roe Lawson. He is a candidate for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board District 1 seat. And hey, Roe, how are you?
Hey, Pete. How's it going?
Oh, you know, same old. Another day in the salt mine. So let's talk about, I guess, the big news was in your race over the last few days was that the incumbent, Rhonda Cheek, now says she is running for re-election. Were you surprised by that?
Very much so, Pete. From having gone from last year saying she wasn't going to run, and then in February she was going to run, and then in May in a tearful goodbye, understanding that she had been dealing with some health issues, that she wasn't going to run, and then a day before the deadline, she is going to run. So, yes, I was surprised.
How does that change the way you've been campaigning, or does it, as you go forward now?
It doesn't. My focus is on the students and improving student outcomes and providing accountability and transparency to the board. My focus has been laser sharp from the beginning that I started this campaign, even back when I talked to you on March 31st. Hasn't changed. The players may have changed, but our mission is to try and go ahead and fix this sinking ship of a disaster called the CMS School Board and everything that's associated with the district, because many parents, that's why I'm running, are looking for a change. They want a new voice, fresh leadership. And so despite the cast of characters growing from three to five, our mission and our goal is still the same.
So you highlight, and when we talked before, safety is a big priority for you. And you say that there isn't even any discussion about reducing violence or fights in the schools. There isn't even a discussion about this at the school board. And you'll have to forgive me. I've not been keeping up with all of the school board meetings, but is that the case? They don't discuss this stuff at all?
Well, I wouldn't say that they don't discuss it, because obviously if the discussion about adding more body scanners to the schools, starting with the high schools and then flowing down to the middle schools, well, then that's part of trying to quell the violence. But just yesterday, there was a news conference with CMS police to discuss this. So I think that's in a step direction. I want to try and partner with CMS police and CMPD to try and make sure that we have actual solutions in place to try and stem the violence. From the number of guns, which was a total of 30 during the school year, and over 100 actual physical altercations, and let's not even talk about the number of underreported or unreported rapes and sexual assaults. I have a 15-year-old daughter that currently attends Huff High, and along with her and every other student, both female and male, I'm concerned about their safety. And when parents don't have that peace of mind that not only will they hopefully get a good education, but they'll be safe in the process, I think we need to have a serious discussion to make sure that every single type of safety concern is addressed. And for example, I want to try and conduct vulnerability surveys at each and every school, and to include the elementary schools. Just because they're not older students doesn't mean that they're any less of a target. So safety is first and foremost my number one concern.
Did you see? I'm sure you did. You gave the quotes to the Charlotte Observer the other day, published, 2 days ago, about this incident at the tennis court during a match or something. I was unaware of this, so I read the piece. And so for folks who aren't aware, just tell them, because I saw some of this on Facebook, and people said, oh, that you yelled at a student or something on the tennis court, and then that you got fired, and so therefore you shouldn't, as a coach, as a volunteer, or not volunteer coach, but you weren't a teacher, right? You were just a coach, and then you got let go for that?
We parted ways. The article, unfortunately, left several things out, specifically on the reason why I was even brought to the court. It did address that there was concern that my player from Huff was getting some advice from his father, which that couldn't have been farther from the truth. Specifically, the altercation itself was when I came there and I clapped for my player, his opponent yelled a derogatory to me. I simply stood up and asked, wanting to clarify, what did you tell me? And that's all that came out of my mouth. Unfortunately, because of differences between me and the athletic director, throughout the year, it kind of came to a head, and they found a way to go ahead and have us part ways. As far as, though, my relationship with the parents, with my players, even to this day, right after that incident, I have had every single parent, in fact, three of them, write a letter in my support asking for my reinstatement. I was coach of the year for two of the 3 years that I was a coach, two of those seasons undefeated, and the other season was COVID interrupted. So it was unfortunate. If I had to do it all over again, I would have just probably looked over at the fellow coach and said, did you just hear what your player said? But I stood up in reaction because prior to actually getting to the court, one of my doubles team won a very emotional match. And so, during the celebration, I was contacted. And so in the heat of the moment, everything that happened, of course, I wouldn't have even just reacted, but I did simply wanting to get clarification what this student player said to me. And that was it. And that was the extent of it.
So are you not allowed to clap for your players?
Well, according to this player, no. And but if anybody knows me, especially the parents, I will vigorously defend my players, and because that's what your coach of a job is, to provide the resources and to be there, provide both the coaching as well as the emotional support during practice, both on and off the court, and especially during stressful and challenging tennis matches, no different than what was happening at that time during the regional tennis tournament.
Yeah. Is there a prohibition on coaching the players during their match? Like the
no,
parent?
There isn't. Not in between the games and changeovers. But what was in question here was whether or not his father, because my player at the time was Hispanic, and they felt that his father was talking to him in Spanish. So again, that proven, you know, the article inaccurately portrayed him as automatically doing that, which, yes, it's a violation of the state high school rules. But again, this was just based on what the other players' parents were saying. But no one else could, or no one ever did validate that. Again, unfortunately, and even after the issue happened, I had, and it was cited in the article from the that I provided an email from the opposing player's coach that said, yes, he just stood up, he put his hand in front of me, and that was it. Nothing happened until Tuesday. I get a call from the athletic director, and he asked me about it. I thought it was a non-issue, and because of that, he decided to part ways 3 days before the state tournament, and unfortunately left me devastated, but I was there still for my players during the state tournament and did everything I could to support them without actually coaching them.
Wow. So how did they do?
unfortunately, they got a bad draw, and of the four doubles and singles, one of our team, only one of them won, and so they didn't advance. But we played our hearts out. We won the conference and went undefeated for a second time of my 3 years. And I'm so proud of the work that I did with my players, and more importantly, just trying to make sure that they stood up for what they believed in. They gave it everything and left it all on the court. And that was no different than the way I coached and trying to be there for my player when his opponent, as well as his opponent's parents, were, you know, questioning him of making some bad calls, and his father saying he was giving him coaching and all that. You know, I wasn't going to tolerate that, and that's what happened, and unfortunately led to them, both athletic director at the time and the principal, to decide, hey, we're going to go and part ways.
Do you think it was because you were anti-mask?
I'm not anti-mask. Despite what the Charlotte Observer wrote, the whole point of that, and of course it was taken out of context, and lesson learned there, with respect to that particular reference, I had a problem with my players playing on the court with a mask. And there's no more socially distanced sport than tennis.
Yeah.
But as the restrictions were being lifted, CMS continued to force our players to wear masks. And so I would challenge the athletic director. Why did my players have to play when especially other districts or other counties weren't forcing their players? And so that was the whole thing. But unfortunately, in this article, it says I'm anti-mask.
Yeah.
That is not the case at all.
This is Roe Lawson. The real lesson here is, radio is superior to print, right? Because here you hear Roe say everything. You get the whole comment. You get it all. And I'm not editing down the clips and stuff to make him say stuff he didn't say. See, radio better than newspapers. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. We're talking with Roe Lawson. He is running for Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board of Education for some reason. And no, I'm kidding. It's over in District 1, northern part of Mecklenburg County. At your website, which I don't know if you have a campaign manager, but you're going to get a talking to because you did not name the website in the first segment, but it's RoeLawson.com, R-O-L-A-W-S-I-N.com, RoeLawson.com. You list your priorities, and number one we already talked about was safety. One of the others, though, that you mentioned is the budget. Again, forgive me, I have not had the opportunity to read through all of the $1.7 billion CMS budget recently, but you say you want a comprehensive forensic audit of the budget. So first I would ask, why? Is there something that you are aware of or you suspect or you've heard or what? Is there something to that request?
First off, the reason why I didn't mention it, because he didn't ask me. So I only listen to my moderator. So let's clear that up. And normally you ask me in the end, Pete. So
I got you. Get that out of the way. Fair enough. It's my fault. That's fair enough.
With regards to the budget, I just want, as a concerned parent and you know, the parents there, to see where is the money going. And this is taxpayer money. There's no reason that every single dollar should be accounted for. And so what I wanted to do, being on the school board, to make sure that we're properly allocating those funds to the proper programs, to teachers, to students. Now it's going to be $2.1 billion, Pete. Mm. And so just within a calendar school year, it's increased to $400 million. Well, what's happened to that money? One, why are they getting it? Is it because of just every year the school board is allowed to get an increase in the budget? Well, that's fine. At the same time, how is that justified when you have student outcomes that are one of the worst in the country? Specifically, over 60% of third graders aren't reading at a proficient level. Over 80% of both African American and Hispanic students aren't reading at a proficient at third grade level. Yet we're going to go ahead and increase the budget by $400 million. I would like to know, and being on the school board, where's the money going? And so whether it's a forensic audit, one done by a CPA or an accounting firm, I don't care. I want to know where's the money going so that I can then be in a position on the board to make sure, okay, well, this isn't working. Why are we continuing to fund it? And this other program is working, but it would be doing much better if it got more funding. So I don't want to make it any more complicated mm-hmm. other than I think the taxpayers, the parents, the families, knowing that there's a $2.1 billion budget out there. Granted, it is the 17th largest school district in the country with over 141,000 students. At the same time, even County Commissioner Bill Malik said, it's not a funding issue, it's a spending issue.
So how do you succeed in getting such an audit done, right? You're going to need to get other board members if you win. You need to get buy-in, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, because if I can go ahead and request it and find the means, one thing that people are going to find out about Roe Lawson is I'm a pretty resourceful guy. And I'm not just going to simply take no for an answer. If I was, then I wouldn't be running. And despite talking to some other former and current board members that are telling me, well, I just can't get this information. How could you not get this information? How could you not get a budget audit done when this is directly in our wheelhouse? We are the ones who come up with the budget. We help dictate policy. And more importantly, we also allocate funds, both given by the state and the county, on where it's supposed to go. So why do I not have the ability? And how I go about that, I would certainly love to work and collaborate with my fellow board members, because why wouldn't they too want to know so that they can report back to their district and then their constituents, and more importantly, the parents, that so that they can have confidence? Because right now, it is pretty unanimous that many people, myself included, don't have confidence at all in this board. That's why I'm running.
Gotcha. RoLawson.com is the website, R-O-L-A-W-S-I-N. Ro Lawson is the candidate for District 1, one of the candidates for District 1 School Board. Thanks for your time, Ro. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Pete. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT 704-570-1110 1-800-WBT-1110. I apologize. I've not gotten to a lot of emails and stuff. I've been quite busy during the breaks. Let me just tie in this story here. It's out of the New York Times, and it is actually from last month, but our my guest, Ro Lawson, made reference to it. He's running for school board in Charlotte-Mecklenburg. The New York Times did a story about how students are recovering from the pandemic. Elementary school students may need at least 3 years to catch up to where they would have been had the pandemic not happened. 3 years. Middle schoolers, they may need five or more. That, according to a report released by a nonprofit organization that provides academic assessments to schools. So they may have a bit of a vested interest here, right? A financial interest. They, because they sell the service. Oh, they're going to be 5 years behind. So we could catch them up. Give us the contract. Researchers examined the results of math and reading assessments for more than 8 million students in about 25,000 schools. And it did not look at high schools. Recovery is expected to take the longest for groups that were most affected by the pandemic, including low-income students and Black, Hispanic, and Native American students. Research has found that extended remote learning was a primary driver of lost learning, which is not possible because the head of the North Carolina Association of Educators here said that learning loss was a myth. I'm not sure what these experts are talking about. Tamika Walker-Kelly said it's a myth. High poverty schools tended to spend more time learning remotely, as did Black and Hispanic students. A Harvard economist named Thomas Kane has been raising the alarm about the magnitude of intervention needed. By his calculus, students at high poverty schools that stayed remote for more than half of a school year lost the equivalent of 22 weeks of instruction. But a lot of the common interventions, the New York Times says, do not have enough firepower to make up a gap of that size. Summer school typically is about brings about 5 weeks of gain. That's why they're saying it's going to take years. Another popular option, doubling math instruction over an entire school year. That may yield a bit more, like up to 10 weeks of instructional time. Even frequent small group tutoring, that's considered to be one of the best, although most expensive options, even that cannot single-handedly make up for the worst of the pandemic's impact. This guy, Thomas Kane, estimated that when done well over the course of a school year, tutoring may yield the equivalent of about 19 weeks gained, which is still a little bit shy of the 22 weeks lost. North Carolina lawmakers got some encouraging news. The state's youngest students are recovering from the pandemic learning loss, they say. State Superintendent Catherine Truitt presented preliminary data showing that reading proficiency rates for kindergarten and first grade students rose sharply over the course of last year and are now above the national average. But it's the national average, which, as I just mentioned, probably not so high. Moving quicker than the rest of the nation, she says. That's good. The information was welcome news after months of reports showing how students have fallen significantly behind academically due to the pandemic. Multiple national and state studies have shown the extended period of time where students were fully or partially remote has had negative academic consequences. This is a report by McClatchy's Education Beat reporter out of Raleigh, Kyung Hui. The schools in the districts that were in person the most also tended to be the ones where they maintained student growth, said Jenny Korn, the director of research and evaluation at DPI. they weren't as negatively impacted. One DPI study found students were between 2 to 15 months behind in reading and math. Multiple programs are being used, like intensive tutoring, to try to get students caught up. But Jenny Korn says, I don't care. Jenny Korn said, no, I'm just kidding. She says, all right. She said she told lawmakers that it could take 3 or 4 years to get some students caught up. 3 to 4 years. Okay. Looking down here at some of the stats, according to DPI, reading proficiency, 27% for kindergartners, 38% for first grade students. By the end of the school year, North Carolina's reading proficiency rate was at 67% for kindergarten and 63% for first grade. So great job getting those kids up to those levels. Catherine Truitt told the committee she and her team are going to go through the data in more detail, and they'll have more information in the coming months. She credited at least part of the gains to the science of reading, quote unquote, a method of literacy instruction that stresses phonics. Phonics. Do you remember that? Phonics? You remember the big fight about that? Some expert in the education field pushed everybody away from phonics. I think we covered this a couple of, probably about a month or so ago. Yeah, whoops, my bad. Yeah, that was a mistake. Sorry. My apologies to the generations of kids that we totally screwed over, but we're working phonics back in now. In North Carolina, at least. And then I mentioned the NCAE, North Carolina Association of Educators. It is a part of the national union, the NEA. They sent out an email recently inviting those committed to education justice to join a new coalition aimed at fighting for topics that parents have pushed back on at their school board meeting over the last year, namely critical race theory and saving, quote unquote, banned books. Your kid must have access to this porn. All right, that's the line in the sand here. The new coalition is called Honest Education Action and Leadership, or HEAL. HEAL. Oh, well, they call themselves HEAL. So obviously, they've got to be trying to heal people. You wouldn't call yourself that if that's not what you were about, like Antifa, right? The national effort is supported by the National Education Association, the NEA, as well as People's Action, Dignity in Schools, and many others committed to education justice. According to Influence Watch, this is the story by A.P. Dillon at her Substack. She also writes for North State Journal. Influence Watch identifies this group, People's Action. It's a 501c4 lobbying arm of People's Action Institute. That is a consortium of left-wing community organizing groups. It's among the network of lefties and progressive organizations of Democracy Alliance, which is the well-funded organization that meets several times a year to strategize ways to push progressive agendas and candidates forward. Right? They are in the schools, folks. They're already there. The long march continues. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. There's a piece here at hotair.com, John Sexton. He's actually quoting a piece written by a fellow named Wesley Yang. But the actual author that Wesley Yang is quoting is anonymous because he's a teacher in a blue city, in a blue state, at a public school. He's on the left as well. Here's what he said, quote, I'm a leftist, like a big one. I hate capitalism. I support abortion on demand. And I unironically use phrases like systems of oppression and the dominant culture. The last big paper I put together for my undergrad degree was on critical race theory, for the love of Pete. Okay, he says for the love of God. But I'm not the sort of person who can be easily dismissed as a conservative crank. But plenty of my fellow leftists are still willing to try on the grounds that anyone who thinks there might be any problem with diversity and equity and inclusion policies must necessarily be a slack-jawed MAGA troll. And what he says in this piece is, things are as bad as you have heard. They are as bad. And I think that will dovetail pretty nicely into Scott's call. Hello, Scott. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, Pete. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. What's going on?
Hey, I heard your earlier statistics about how poorly the public education system serves students in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of wanted to throw out a call to action. Hey, if you're a parent or grandparent who has any time to homeschool your kids, now's the best time in the world. There's so many resources available. And now that you know the statistics on how poorly the public school system has served your kids, pick it up.
Well, but what about all of the fantastic socialization skills that they get, roaming the halls, being attacked by fellow students, maybe sexually abused by a coach or teacher? Like, what about, I mean, think about the socialization. Yellow, Scott?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I was just joking.
Oh, I was just going to say, you mean on Zoom, like social skills on Zoom?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, so, and to your point, though, about the resources, there are a lot. This was always the biggest issue I had heard from wary parents was that, well, what do you do for extracurricular activities? And now, and I understood that, like, you know, 20 years ago, but now you've got all sorts of clubs and associations and all sorts of groups that do all sorts of stuff that fill that gap because the market finds a way.
Well, so my experience is we homeschooled three kids, and one of them was way ahead and the others aren't so much. But there were tons of resources, out of school resources, dance classes, martial arts, everything in the world, church,
mm-hmm.
God bless church. And all these different resources available to socialize your kids. And the main most important thing I'd like to echo is, how socialized are your kids getting if they're together with 300 other kids their exact age? What other point in their life are they ever going to spend time with 300 other people their exact age?
They could crash on an island and get a conch shell.
The military.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. All right. Scott, thanks for the call, sir. I appreciate it. And
welcome back, Pete.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And good job with the homeschooling of your kids. I encourage people to explore it. I don't know. Look, I'm libertarian, right? You do what you want. You make your own decisions. But I highly recommend parents look into that. If the last 2 years didn't convince you that the government K-12 system needs to be dismantled, I don't know what else you need, right? I mean, like, I don't know what else, because do you think that's the last time something like that's going to happen? They got a taste of it. It's like the man-eater bear. Once they get a taste of it, or the shark, it's like Jaws. That's it. You can't, or like a dog went, okay. Back to this piece here by John Sexton at Hot Air. Hang on. Before Scott just said something, and I have this in the stack of stuff. Robin Kennedy, Fox46.com, Queen City News, quote, a brand new fine arts center opens its doors to an ever-increasing student base at Catholic schools across the Charlotte area. This comes as public school enrollment drops, the numbering in the thousands. Wednesday was the new fine arts center opening act at Charlotte Catholic High School. Donors ponied up the $21 million bill to build a 47,000-square-foot facility, 600-seat auditorium, art rooms, a band, chorus, dancing, and digital lab. And the head of the Gaston Christian School said, quote, it all goes back to COVID. So parents, think about it. I'll see you tomorrow. Don't break anything while I'm gone.